Next case is 96-269, Leonard R. Deloya versus Franciscan Health System, Central Ohio, Inc. Mr. Olf.
May it please the court. It is my hope to consume no more than 7 minutes of this time and reserve the balance of our time to my distinguished co-counsel in the Republic. I might say that since having passed the age of 71 a few months ago, I find the time goes very, very swiftly, much more swiftly than it did years and years ago. So I will try to say the things I hope to say within 7 minutes. First, I'd like to point out the two trust instruments with which we are dealing here. They're both trusts executed by hands of Leonard Deloya, the plaintiff and trustee here. First is Aunt Clara Monte, after giving certain other gifts, said that she gave 25% of her residuary estate to St. Anthony Medical Center, Columbus, Ohio, and I emphasize Columbus, Ohio, for use among the sick poor in accordance with the hospital's mission.
Excuse me. Is there any evidence in the record that the grantor knew about the Franciscan Sisters of the Poor Foundation Endowment Fund? Any evidence in the record that she had any separate intent to give money to the foundation endowment fund, or was it always intended to go to St. Anthony itself?
I believe that they didn't know anything about the foundation you mentioned. This was April 20th, 1985, long before many of the other things came into existence. So the gift was to the St. Anthony Medical Center of Columbus.
And the center is the one that determined that it should go to the fund? Who made the decision to put it in this particular fund?
The fund was put in under the agreement, which was done by Mr. Valinsky, about whom I'll talk more in a minute, and he set up this statement, and the fund was then invested in the foundation at Brooklyn, New York.
So there's nothing in the record or the testimony that evidences that the grantor knew about the separate fund itself. She just knew about St. Anthony, so she learned about it apparently through her lawyer who had been on the board, or somebody connected to her who had been on the board.
Well, it was her nephew, Leonard Deloya, the plaintiff. But no, these hands.
Well, she would have been aware that the Franciscans operate St. Anthony's.
Well, I don't know. See, these ladies couldn't testify.
I know that.
And this was April 20th, 85.
It's common knowledge of the Franciscans, especially as rich as St. Anthony's.
As Justice Stratton, I'm also concerned. St. Anthony, the only way that all that money got invested in the fund in New York was St. Anthony's, because nobody would have had authority other than St. Anthony's, who was the recipient of the funds. Upon distribution, it went to St. Anthony's, who then, I mean, in theory, where's the authority to put it anywhere else except St. Anthony's could invest it somewhere? Wouldn't that be right, Mr. Baldwin?
Yes, St. Anthony, Mr. Valinsky, who did this.
Yeah, but we don't. Not, let's forget about this distribution form thing. Let's just talk about the trust. The trust said St. Anthony's for this purpose.
Yes.
And then the check was made payable to St. Anthony's, the check for a couple hundred thousand dollars. And St. Anthony's received it. And so my question, I had two. What standing does a former trustee, as I see it, having, you know, the distribution was made, check was paid, St. Anthony's invested, wherever they invested, it so happened it was in New York. Now we have a former trustee suing, you know, with what standing? How do we have any authority? That's my one primary question. And secondly, if the, you know, the investment shouldn't be anywhere but where St. Anthony's put it, right? Not where Mr. DeLoya wants it, or not where Mr. Walensky, Walensky, who are they to have any authority? The trust document controls, doesn't it?
Well,
let's talk about the former trustee. Once distribution was made, it said his powers ended upon distribution. So was distribution made when the check was paid in September?
Well, that's one of the questions we raised earlier. Whether that is a distribution or not.
Why wouldn't it be? What would prevent it from being a distribution?
Because it was given for the purpose of the sick poor in the area of St. Anthony's.
Yep, St. Anthony's received the check.
Right.
And then they invested.
Yes, it was invested.
Doesn't that end the trustee's role?
Well, I don't think so.
Are you saying that because it was not distributed for the intent of the trust, that the distribution didn't take place?
Right.
Is that what you're saying? In other words, even though the trustee did deliver a check to a entity, the entity was not in conformance with the wishes of the trust itself, thus there is no distribution. Is that your contention?
Yes. Now to go ahead, the other trust, the Krasoppi Trust, was identical and also executed April the 20th of 85. And I want to emphasize, in view of the questions, that these two ladies didn't know anything about the later foundations or the later dealings. Done by Mr. Walensky, the officer of the defendants.
Who was the distribution check made payable to? Your brief on page 2 says that on September 12th, the check was issued to St. Anthony Medical Center. In Appley's brief, Franciscan Health System, they specifically say delivered two checks totaling so-and-so payable to the Franciscan Sisters of the Poor Foundation. Who's right? It can't be both.
That's right. My recollection is it was payable to St. Anthony.
It would have to be, or it wouldn't be conform to the trust. You know, the trustee would be in breach of his duty, wouldn't he, to pay it to anybody other than St. Anthony without a court order, you know, because of cypre or deviation.
Right.
No, except that was the parent organization of St. Anthony, the St. Francis Sisters were.
Yes.
But you think they were made out to the St. Anthony? So we'll find out from them.
Mr. Alton, let me ask you if the settlers here had wanted you make a strong point that the intention of the settlers was this money was to remain in Columbus and not go to Dayton, as it ultimately was for the trial court. They gave substantial funds to University Hospital, Ohio University Hospital, to be used for heart research, I guess. If they're, and you argue that University Hospital is one of the places, one of the hospitals in Columbus that treats the sick and the poor. If the settlers' intention was to, overriding intention, was to keep the money in Columbus, why would they not have, since they've already given some money to University Hospital, why wouldn't they have given this money to University Hospital as well? And that, my point is, it seems to me that they were more concerned about leaving some money to the Franciscan Order, probably because of their religious bearing, rather than being concerned about it staying in Columbus. Seemed that they could have done that by giving it to, in their trust, to University Hospital, couldn't they?
Well, they gave a substantial amount of money to University Hospital, but the part about the two St. Anthony's was for the sick poor in that area.
So you think they were really even that concerned about the geographical area, not, I mean, that it shouldn't have even gone to, it had to go to the location of which St. Anthony Hospital was located? Were they that specific about their intention, do you think, or?
Well,
that seems to find
the say Columbus, Ohio, the sick poor.
Let's move to your other issue about judicial notice, because that's the other one of the two that interests me. On what basis of what rules do you think the court had any right, even you say obligation, but had any right to take judicial notice of Columbus Hospitals? What are the two there are two judicial notice rules. Which one, if either, fits?
Well, we pointed out that in our motion for new trial, the other hospitals which were willing to undertake this obligation of serving the people near St. Anthony.
Mr. Allen, that's not the question. You make the statement that it's remarkable that the trial judge couldn't take within the universe, as you put it, these other two hospitals. Now, tell me where she was supposed to get the authority to take judicial notice of anything that is outside the case. For instance, Rule 44.1, judicial notice shall be taken of the rules of the Supreme Court of this state, decision of constitutional, public statutory law of this state. Obviously, that doesn't fit. While you cite Rule 201.5, I think you mean 201, Rule of Evidence, very clearly that says this rule governs only judicial notice of adjudicated facts, i.e. the facts of the case. Those two hospitals weren't in the facts of this case, were they?
They were in our motion to trial.
But not at trial, were they?
Right.
Okay. So how should she, you almost castigate her for not taking judicial notice. How could the trial judge have even done that under these existing rules?
Well, I think she could take judicial notice based upon our motion for the trial, where we set forth the affidavits of the other hospitals which were willing to undertake this, the function of helping the sick poor around St. Anthony.
Let's assume that she could do that based on your motion for new trial. Are those adjudicated facts of the case? That's not what we would define as adjudicated facts of the case, would we? The adjudicated facts are whether or not this is a Cypre deviation or a clear trust interpretation. Aren't those the adjudicated facts of the case?
Well, I think that the motion for new trial brought forth to the trial judge the things which she should have taken judicial notice.
Okay.
Let me point this out, Your Honors. In our Court of Appeals brief, I might mention that Judge Close and his decision at the Court of Appeals pointed out that the trial judge was 5.5 months late in making her ruling on a motion for summary judgment, and we didn't get that ruling until 2 or 3 days before the hearing started. But Rule 1B of the Rules of Civil Procedure states, these rules shall be construed and applied to effect just results and for the expeditious administration of justice. Rule 8F states, all pleadings shall be so construed as to do substantial justice. So I think that in view of the fact that the trial judge herself five or 8 months late in her ruling that justice would include the matters which we set forth in our motion for new trial, of which the trial judge could have taken judicial notes. So I think we can.
That's a 2 minute light. That means you have 2 minutes remaining.
Okay. All right.
Justice Wright, Mr. Wright is nervously trying to get your attention over there, Mr. Holland.
He told me he's going to drop his briefcase. No, it was my intention to have read the testimony of David Valensky starting at page 8 because I think it is dispositive of the issues in this case, and I further will say that we have briefed all the other issues very carefully, and so starting at the top of page 8 of our merit brief, we got Mr. Valensky to admit that the intent of the donors would be honored in determining what would happen to the funds. He said, generally speaking, yes. And again, the next question was that they would honor the intent of the donors, and his answer was correct. And again, was that Prasathi Monty Fund, was that a terminology used for this particular fund? And I now ask you, what does the term donor advised means? And he said it means that we would encourage and want Mr. DeLoya to continue to assist in the distribution of that money in the future. And
Mr. Alden, you've used your time. We do have that in our brief, which we have read. So your red light is on, which means your time has expired.
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Tepe.
I'm here on behalf of the four Franciscan defendants of the hospital and foundations that were made for the complaint.
Who were the checks made payable to?
They were made to the Central Ohio Foundation.
The brief says payable to the Franciscan sisters of the Poor Foundation at Central Ohio. Is that the payee?
That is.
So the
two checks.
So that if I find those checks, I won't find them made payable to St. Anthony's the way the other brief says.
And so where's the authority to do that in the trust agreement?
In the trust agreement, there is none.
And then, isn't that what controls here?
Yes, it does.
And so nobody has, okay, and that then, along the same lines of a trustee making a payment that is in violation of the trust, What do you say? Nobody has raised the standing of this former trustee to even bring this suit. You haven't raised that. Is that an issue here?
I think that my understanding is that it's probably not an issue because I've failed to raise it. By that, I may have waived the question of standing. I think it's a good point, one to be considered here. I do think that the case proceeded ahead probably because it needed to proceed ahead. An issue had been brought. St. Anthony's was holding money that was to be used for care of the sick poor in accordance with its mission, but St. Anthony's had stopped providing care to the sick poor. So there was an issue, and we did need a court determination as to what was to be done. So again, the case didn't proceed.
As a general practice, assuming a distribution to a charitable organization by a trustee, how many, you know, how long? I know the Attorney General has authority to watch that kind of thing, to see the distribution that trusts are used for their proper purposes, et cetera. But how long? I mean, assuming a distribution, let's say it's a much smaller amount of money, $10,000 goes to a trust or a charitable organization, How long does that, does someone supervise that, that money to see that every nickel gets used appropriately? Because here, it was paid. My question is, once it's distributed and the entity invests it, it hasn't yet been used, but maybe it has. How do we know?
Well, I think that you're right. And one of the arguments we made below is that St. Anthony's Hospital operated on this area for 100 years. During that time, provided a great deal of uncompensated care to the residents of this area and incurred tens of millions of dollars of debt, which forced the hospital ultimately to close. And we would have liked to have taken the money and applied it to pay off that debt that the hospital still exists to hide.
So that wouldn't have been, would that have fulfilled the trust?
I think absolutely. Under the terms of this trust, had the hospital taken the money and spent it in a single way on the care of the sick poor, fulfilled the terms of the trust.
Which might be just paying St. Anthony's debt.
Which might have been paying St. Anthony's debt. Absolutely. The trial judge rejected that order, said that was not permissible, and ordered the money to be used at another Franciscan hospital in Dayton, which we found to be a satisfactory resolution of the case and, of course, raised no issue.
Even your brief doesn't seem to have a clear position on distribution. At page 7 of your brief, it says the money was distributed, and then page 10 of your brief said this money not having been distributed and clearly can't be distributed the way it should. I'm wondering what your position really is. I think it's 7 and 10.
Okay. I apologize.
What is your position?
Clear. My position is that absolutely the money was distributed from the trust.
Okay.
Mr. Malloy delivered checks.
10, on page 10, you say it's undisputed that this distribution is impossible given the sale of St. Anthony's. It's Betty Montgomery's brief. I'm sorry. You're not.
No,
gotcha. You're saying the Franciscan. Sorry.
Right.
Yeah, you clearly make the point that the money was conveyed, the transfer took place, end of the obligation under the trust.
Yes, I think Mr. Boyd did his job in delivering the money to the hospitals. But having decided with Mr. DeLoya to preserve this as an endowment fund for the care of the sick poor, which I think the hospital also had the option to do, it didn't have to spend the money a single day. When the hospital closed, and we still had a fund of $300,000 plus, there was an issue as to what we could do with the money at that point. One solution was to apply the past debts, which the court rejected. Another solution, which we presented to the court, was that it be used at another Franciscan hospital. We presented testimony to the court that there was another Franciscan hospital down the road, that Franciscan hospital, like St. Anthony's, had the exact same mission statement, which was pointed out in the trust, and the court, exercising its discretion, decided that that would be a suitable application of this funds for care of the sick poor in accordance with the trust set out by Mrs. Monty and Mrs. Brasoff. Now, having done that, it was all done in accordance with a very common situation in charitable trust, that a gift is made to a charity, that charity goes out of existence for whatever reason, and the record, as it is in this case, there were questions earlier about whether there was any evidence put on as to whether these two women knew anything about the Franciscan foundations, about the whole Franciscan system. The answer is the records devoid of any such information. We do not know clearly what these two women would have wanted.
Does the trustee retain any authority, such as in this case, when he is distributed to an organization that he feels meets the trust intent, and that organization goes out of existence, does the trustee retain any authority to then redistribute the amount that was already given to the one organization, the someone that would, again, meet the trust's desire?
I think the answer is no. I mean, I suppose one could draft the trust and specifically provide that.
Because once you give it to Hospital A, and they go out of existence, and there's $300,000 left, they really, the intent of the trust agreement itself then is in question, and they could give it to the Salvation Army or to someone down the street, and it really doesn't seem equitable to the intent of the trust that they should have that determination of where the monies go after they go out of existence for which the trust was intended to be used.
To my knowledge, the only legal mechanism is to apply to a court for application of the doctrines of deviation or SIPRED if you believe that.
And the interests of the trust are represented by the state.
That is correct.
Point.
That is why the title attorney general is a mandatory party. And through the attorney general, all charities are represented in the charitable interest of the state as a whole. I did want to reserve some time for the Ohio Attorney General, so if there are no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Tepe. Ms. Phillips.
Concern doesn't seem to be with this case. It's that the body of law on SIPRE might be upset if this decision is not properly crafted. Is that, do I read your brief right?
That's fair to say. I think the trial court, by saying that Dr. SIPRE did not apply, misconstrued that. I think that there's a good discussion in the craft of the shorter case that was cited in the brief. And basically, the doctrine of SIPRE requires that there be a general charitable intent, and that there's been a failure of specific gift. Well, clearly there's been a failure that the entities had closed, and I think that the entities was referenced in the gift. But there is clearly also a general specific intent, or general intent towards 64 that was in there. So the SIPRE doctrine does apply.
But do you ever reach those if, in fact, there's already been a distribution made? For instance, what if the purposes of the trust had been completed, the trust had been terminated because there had been a distribution, and then there's a failure of the charitable beneficiary, that is St. Anne's. You wouldn't come back and say that SIPRE applies and we want to open that all up again, would you?
No, you're
isn't
right.
That what happened here? Wasn't there a distribution?
My understanding is that the problem was that the hospital that received the funds did not do anything with the funds to benefit the Sick Poor. With the funds, they merely maintained them in an invested fund, and that the charitable trust would require both distribution to the hospital and use by the hospital for those purposes. Otherwise, we could go in and have.
That's true with the beneficiary, but what's happened to the trust? Is the trust still active?
I would say until the funds are spent on purposes that they've been given for, then they
You're saying that a beneficiary controls the existence of the life of a trust after the purposes of the trust have been completed?
Well, spending the funds we say forward complete the purposes of the trust.
Or the distribution completes it. It's like a conveyance, is it not? You convey it, the trust is divested of it. And if the purposes of the trust have been accomplished at that point, I mean, you, on the basis of what you're arguing, you'd keep trusts open for ad infinitum, possibly.
Well, when you give money to a charitable organization, you are obligated, if you are a trustee, and the trustee is obligation to give it that charitable obligation, certainly ends at the moment of the cutting of the check. However, those funds remain subject to a general charitable trust as defined in 109. The hospital cannot take them under one purpose and then suddenly go out and spend them.
You're really talking about two different trusts. Justice Douglas is talking about the donor's trust.
Correct.
And you're talking about the entrustment of the funds to the donee and how that has to be managed. And did I understand you correctly to say that when you got involved, the funds were just sitting there invested? They weren't benefiting the sick poor anywhere, not in Dayton or anywhere else?
Correct.
What position did you take, your office take, with respect to what should happen? You had these competing suggestions, the representatives of the donor suggesting they ought to go to a different Columbus hospital for that purpose.
We supported that for economic reasons, that the charity that already holds it, to the extent possible, should be allowed to deviate within the terms of its own holdings, rather than allowing competing charities to come in, get expensive new proposals, fight back and forth every time they see that there's a problem.
That's a judgment call that your office made.
I think it's a policy.
Was the donee given an opportunity, or the donor seek an opportunity to lobby you all for their point of view?
My understanding is that there was some discussion, yes.
Okay. Because the concern I have goes beyond this case, too. I watch what we see here in some cases. I watch what I guess I see accounts from time to time of some rather famous charitable donations that seem to turn out badly in terms of the intent of the donor. It seems to me we need to be careful if we're going to give charitable giving a bad name from the standpoint. I guess this is, I'll just share the impressions that I'm forming, and that is that in some cases, folks who have a very specific purpose in mind for the donation, a very clear purpose, and they're motivated by that, the donee takes the money, knowing full well they never intend to carry out the wishes of the donor. The next thing you know, you have a real estate development going where something else might be envisioned and somebody taking the cash and those kinds of things. So you feel there is an opportunity for those who have an interest in seeing to it that the donor's wishes are not totally frustrated to at least have an input. In your office, who has the bigger picture perspective?
I think that it's fair to say that we would always take into consideration those factors. Our client, so to speak, is the charitable beneficiary, and that obligation continues after the distribution, so that we would support, we would not allow a development to go in if that frustrated the purpose. We would certainly take that trust to
come to bear. And in this specific case, you feel the final resolution does, while it does not carry out the purpose in the geographic region that was intended, the final resolution here is going to benefit the sick poor who cannot afford to pay their medical bills.
We believe there was some ambiguity whether or not the donor's intent was to
what's the question that bothers me. You're comfortable this isn't going to go to pay the doctor for claims at the Dayton Hospital?
That would be our obligation to provide, in general, any charge to the Dakota State.
Thank you, Ms. Phillips. Mr. Wright, Mr. Alton used your time, which may take 30 seconds.
Yes, I will just take 30 seconds. I think this is a great question for you. You never preoccupied or interested in the issue. The check was issued at the end of the trust and so forth and so on. If there's one thing that the parties in this case gentleman who has absolutely no monetary interest in this matter. It is a first source in our group. The doctor from South Korea does apply in this particular case. We think it important that drop works throughout the state. He gives us some real guidance with respect to the application. Here, we're not arguing about discretion. I, like the rest of this court, believe in strong measure of discretion from the but not unbridled discretion. Here we had a clear out on Carmel, which is all laid out in the brief, where these funds should have gone for the sick board costs. And I thank you very much, Mr. Chief Justice, for the 30 seconds of the call.
Turned into a minute, but that's all right. Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.